Hello, it's Sarah and Matt here. We have created something special for you. We have gotten in touch with one of our favorite doctors, Dr. Joel Fuhrman, who's a New York Times bestselling author, an MD, and a wealth of knowledge to come in and talk to us about coronavirus.
Dr. Fuhrman is someone that we respect. Like, probably it's difficult to describe how much we respect his work. And for a time such as this in 2020, where things are very uncertain, up in the air, and there's a lot of fear surrounding the virus, we wanted to get one of the best minds that we could find just right in front of you right now. So you didn't have to search for the internet trying to understand how to best defend yourself against this virus, how to boost immunity, and the role that the gut, the curious role that the gut plays in all of this. So we've gone straight to the source. It's an incredible interview, seriously. It should be shared far and wide with your friends and family, because this is the message that the world needs to hear right now. So we're going to jump right in and get your notepad out, because it's amazing. Dr. Joel Fuhrman, thank you so much for making yourself available in these very interesting times in 2020. We've been itching to get you on the call and just tell us all about the latest research, what you've been discovering, what you've been investigating, and how this all gut health is why it's so important in 2020. So thank you so much for being on the call.
My pleasure.
So in our episode one that has just gone live, we looked at the foundation of gut health, and specifically with some of the big trending things that are happening right now regarding everyone's very concerned about immunity for obvious reasons. So I'm curious, why is there a connection between gut health and immunity, and why should we look at that?
Well, you know, I have like some radical statements and messages to give to you today.
Ooh.
And that is that, you know, COVID-19 pandemic is devastating the world and killing people. And I'm saying it doesn't have to be this way, and that this could have been predicted, which I did discuss this actually in my book, Superimmunity, about 5 or 6 years ago. And this is not going to be the last pandemic, unless people change the way they eat and support proper health of their immune system and gut health as well. In other words, the body isn't divided into different compartments. You don't have an immune system and a gut and a digestive tract and a brain. You have one body where everything is interacting each other and interwoven like fibers of the cloth. And what I'm saying right now is that when you're eating a diet that's rich in anti-cancer immune-supporting foods, then you have maximum function of the immune system, and that goes along with gram positives in the digestive tract, not gram negatives. It goes along with a thickening of the microbiome to prevent viruses from penetrating through the gut more readily and keeping the glycemic effect low, because a thickened biofilm on the villi lowers the glycemic effect, the excursion of glucose through the gut wall in everything you eat. So we're talking about these foods that thicken the microbiome and create a healthy biofilm that also support that same butyrate, those same short-chain fatty acids that regulate your apostat and the hypothalamus. Those fatty acids are produced by the microbiome in your gut. So feeding your garden so you grow the right bacteria reduces your appetite and controls the apostat and the hypothalamus, so you don't overeat food as much. Then, so you're satisfied with the right amount of calories. Now, I could go on and on, but the point that I'm making here before I go too far is that this coronavirus doesn't stand a chance against a healthy person's immune system. It's not a deadly virus in immunocompetent people. It's only killing overweight, malnourished, and people eating fast foods, fried foods, and sweets. It doesn't matter whether you're old or young. If you eat like other Americans eat and other people in most of the world who are living on processed foods, white rice, greasy food, fried foods, oil, sweets, soda, you know, meats, they're eating all kinds of things that don't fuel the microbiome, don't fuel the gut, and don't supply the phytochemicals that the immune system is dependent on. So this virus is allowed to ravage the world and create all this tragedy and death and damage and putting people in hospitals, being intubated on, you know, on breathing machines, all because we've spread this processed food and fast food around, penetrating all parts of the world today, where people are eating white bread and pizza and fried chicken and French fries and donuts, and they're doing it all over the world today. It used to be just in America or just pockets of the American South, but now the whole world is eating poorly and we're seeing this virus spread through the world. And it's not the virus that's the problem. It's the food that's the problem. I say an ancient wise man once said that it's not just keeping your hands away from your face. It's keeping the junk food out of your hands that's going to make that's important with coronavirus. So I'm also saying that you can't be healthy and overweight. There's no such thing as a healthy overweight person. And being overweight suppresses the immune system dramatically because fat cells are naturally hypoxic. That means they don't get a great blood supply. So they spew out cytokines. They chronically raise your white blood cell counts. They chronically create more reactive oxygen species in the body. And they make your immune system always hyperactive, overworking. So now that we're exposed to the virus, it can't excite itself. It can't control itself. It overreacts. It causes excessive amounts of inflammation and can cause different problems like cytokine storm. You know, because people are confusing cytokine storm. They're saying these healthy people have a healthy immune system. They overreact to the virus, creates too much of a reaction, causing cytokine storm. It's ruining their lungs and ruining their health. I'm saying that's not factual. That's not what's happening. It's people with a healthy immune system. You have pro-inflammatory cytokines and you have anti-inflammatory cytokines. And the immune system has the capacity to create inflammation to remove and kill the virus and virus-infected cells, but it also can control the inflammation from damaging healthy tissue and getting too far in the body. In other words, your immune system has the ability to stop viral invasion, to stop viral replication, to stop viral translation of new DNA and RNAs that can escape immune system capture, and to stop cytokine and inflammation from overreacting and causing damage to the body. Your immune system controls all these things. And the only way you can achieve protection is by putting the right foods in your mouth.
Amazing. So although it sounds radical, it isn't really radical.
It shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be radical. Mm. And I'm curious, like, this is solid science. We're not talking pseudoscience here. I know everything you've been saying is backed up by the latest research. Why is it that, why do you think, you know, in terms of our leaders and some of our medical leaders that have been giving us advice, it's revolved around very external factors, right? It's like wash your hands, you know, social distancing, which we know all can be effective in stopping the virus, obviously. But why haven't we spoken about this foundation, or what this food issue, this like supporting our immune system, our microbiome? Why I personally haven't heard it discussed. I'm curious as if you have, maybe I've missed it, but I'm guessing probably not. And why would that be the case? Why aren't we looking at it from this perspective?
The food industry and the drug industry and the chemical industry are intertwined, and they collectively are powerful lobbyists affecting social and governmental action and opinion. In other words, they influence the way people think. And now, and the current world today thinks that medical doctors have the answers to our health issues by giving people poisonous substances called drugs. And people think taking drugs is their answer for good health. And they go to doctors with high blood pressure and they're put on a drug to lower it. Because we have a drug that can lower blood pressure, so we measure blood pressure and we lower it. We can measure blood sugar in the blood and we can lower that with the medication. We do that too. We can measure cholesterol. We have a drug for that. We can lower that. We've developed this way of thinking to think that detecting and treating the effects, not the cause, instead of, you know, because we never had drugs, people would have to lose weight, stop eating poorly, and get rid of their high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and diabetes. So why don't we talk about food as the cause of type 2 diabetes? Why don't we talk about food and diet as the cause of high blood pressure, heart attack deaths? Why are all the deaths around the world today that's happening every minute, people are dropping dead needlessly, going on dialysis, becoming demented, having strokes, going into emergency rooms, running in emergency vehicles and ambulances to the hospital? All this is happening because of the way people are eating poorly. We don't have to have heart attacks and strokes. We can win the war on cancer right now. Nutritional science has made sufficient advances where we can wipe out probably 90% of the world's cancers if we started people eating right early enough in life. But the point I'm making right now is nutrition is completely suppressed as the answer. And we only see drugs, vaccines, and interviewing doctors. Doctors are not virologists, and they're not nutritionists. All they know is about prescribing drugs, and their whole, everything in their toolbox is just giving people a drug. And it's not the answer for most of what plagues the world. It's not the answer for stopping cancer. It's not the answer for stopping heart attacks. It's not the answer for stopping dementia. And it's not the answer for stopping COVID-19 either. Doctors don't have drugs. They're not going to solve this issue, and neither are vaccines. It's going to continue. So the point is that if you have an unhealthy population, they're going to be susceptible to all these diseases. And our current world is not focused on making a healthy population. They're focused on selling people something to cure them once they get sick. And they want people to be sick. All these businesses want people to be living, but sick as possible. So they take more drugs. And that means you go to eat more processed foods, more restaurant food, and you destroy your health. And then you take more drugs and you're all overweight and all sickly. And you have the big medical care crisis. Everybody's spending their whole everything on medical care, and our medical care costs are through the roof. I mean, why is this the case? I mean, it's the overlong dilemma here. Why isn't it reading, writing, and arithmetic and nutritional science taught in elementary schools, grade schools, and colleges? That's the most critical factor that controls our health destiny, not our knowledge of drugs and pharmaceuticals. You know, drop my pen. I don't know. I don't have the answers. I don't know why society developed like this, but we've gone in the wrong direction. And unless we wake up and change things, we're in the process. We're destroying our planet. We're raping our environment. We're ruining our climate, and we're destroying the health of our population at the same time. We're going in a destructive direction instead of looking at causation and planning ahead years in advance so people can be healthy and resist disease and prevent these infections from spreading. Nobody thinks like this.
Oh, well, I hope this pandemic is a wake-up call for a lot of people to put their health first and put in the building blocks to create that. And I have a question to do with gut health and nutrition. You mentioned it at the start. We started diving into those concepts. And I'll tell you, earlier this week, I found out that the general perspective within gastroenterology, gut health scientists, I suppose, doctors, is that food does not impact gut health, which I just thought, I've been in the integrative space for so long, I just was mind blown when I heard a doctor talk like that to me. What is your perspective on gut health and nutrition? What is the difference between eating processed food versus a nutritious diet?
Well, I'd like to be able to say the word G-bombs, G-B-O-M-B-S, because those foods that have a combination of factors, but are the most gut health supportive foods. It's all about feeding your garden with the right soil and fertilizer and water. And you can take a probiotic. You can inject the feces of a thin person into an overweight person, and the overweight person will lose weight from the feces you inject in the gut microbiome. You can put in their colon. You can, because it'll have better bacteria, but over time it's going to revert back to the bad bacteria that this person was eating. If you want to maintain that good bacteria and have it thrive there and live there ongoing and permanently to have good effects on you, you have to supply it with the food and the fibers that bacteria live on. And the healthy bacteria that want to stay there and take up and live there permanently in your gut and make a thickened biofilm are fed best by G-bombs. Greens, beans, onions, mushrooms, berries, and seeds. Now, we're talking about greens, onions, and mushrooms. I mean, they're rich in all these particular types of fiber, quercetin. They're a prebiotic material. The mushrooms, as you know, have the beta-glucans and all these other polysaccharides in them that fuel the growth of bacteria, of healthy bacteria. We're talking here about, and the beans are the high carbohydrate food that have the most resistant starch and the most slowly digestible starches. So these resistant starch and fibers fuel the growth of bacteria, because the resistant starch is not degraded into glucose. It's fermented by bacteria into short-chain fatty acids. What I'm saying right now is this indigestible carbohydrate in beans is fermented by healthy bacteria and turns the carbohydrate into fat. Now, all that fat isn't absorbed because the fermentation process takes place too far down in the small intestine. So you lose 80% of the calorie absorption. Only 20% of the fat gets absorbed. And 80% coats the colon with an anti-inflammatory substance. But the absorption, even the moderate absorption of the short-chain fatty acids like butyrate produced by bacterial fermentation, is the most powerful regulator of apostat in the hypothalamus, controlling the appetite and making you satisfied with less calories now, with the right amount of calories. So what I'm saying is that the gut bacteria produce the messengers to signal the brain how much you should eat. And they also signal your immune system to function normally, because the immune system is also suppressed by spikes of sugar in the bloodstream. When you have a high sugar, you're diabetic, you're going to be at risk for COVID-19 death. But if you're overweight, you're still going to have a spike of sugar when you eat anything practically, because being overweight makes you insulin resistant and leads to more inflammation. But you see, these foods that, like we're mentioning, the onions, rich in quercetin and other types of organosulfide compounds, the green vegetables, you know, rich in the isothiocyanates, the ITCs that have anti-cancer effects, and the cruciferous, all the types of fibers and the glucosinolates. What I'm saying is these are the substances that the healthy bacteria like. And when you eat them, now when you eat a mango, the glycemic rise of the mango is going to be moderated and kept low, because the biofilm you created by eating the G-bombs, by eating the greens, the beans, and the mushrooms and the onions. So the glycemic effect of the mango is lowered from the gut effect of eating those foods. And when you eat the oatmeal in the morning, you don't raise your glucose, meaning the oatmeal, because you ate the onions and the mushrooms in your diet, or the greens the day before. Scientists call that the second meal effect. The second meal effect means that you've chosen foods that give you a healthy gut microbiome. And then when you eat some food that doesn't give you a healthy microbiome, the effects of that food are mitigated. In other words, the danger from eating some meat is not as bad, because you ate your greens and your beans and your mushrooms, and your microbiome is going to protect you against the effects of the meat, and it affects you effects of the oatmeal. In other words, you get more protective effects from the healthy foods you eat against the foods even that you're not as healthy as the healthy foods you eat. You following me for a second on this?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's excellent. And that sort of leads to the next question, I think. Like, if someone's listening to this right now, they know they're overweight, or they're suffering from autoimmune disease, or they're just not in a great space of health, and they've obviously left it too late, and they need a crash course. And I know you get incredible results at your clinic, amazing clinic that you work out of. So I'd love to hear, what's a crash course? If someone's like, I need to improve my immunity yesterday, so i.e. today, and they want to get healthy as soon as possible, what's the crash course you would take them if you're going to put on your, your army instructor hat and just be like, do this to get your health back on track? What would it be?
Okay, so I do have an infection protection in 20 days little booklet or ebook they can get mailed, so they can get sent to them, you know what I mean? And I have all the recipes and stuff like that. But here's the bottom line of it, that even though when you're overweight, let's say, for example, you have dramatic immune suppression, high risk of death, right? But when people go through gastric bypass or Lap-Band placement and they start losing weight the first month, their diabetes goes away even while they're still overweight. When I measure the immune system markers, the pro-inflammatory markers, the carotenoids in the tissues, the C-reactive proteins, in other words, when we're measuring your excessive white blood cell function, how high your platelets are, we're seeing people in bad health. And then when they start eating healthfully, within 2 to 3 weeks, even while they're still overweight, we see the estrogen levels drop. We see the diabetic levels drop. We see what I'm saying right now is, I call this a nutritarian, a person who's eating with all these high nutrient foods to protect their immune system. But I'm saying, if you're overweight or sickly, you don't have to wait a year to lose 50 pounds. You don't have to wait 6 months to get in good health. You can start dramatically lowering your risk right now within a few weeks, because a nutritarian is either at their ideal weight or they're overweight and dropping towards their ideal weight every single day. When they do that, they're starting to get in great and better health. So what I'm saying right now is, we find that people are losing 2 pounds a week or more. We start to, while they're overweight, we start to see the gut health start to change in the right direction, and the immune system start to fix itself, mitigating, dramatically lessening the dangers of being overweight if they're moving at the 2 pounds or 1 kilogram a week of weight loss on this program. And I outline the program. I have books about it. My latest book is called Eat for Life. And as you know, I have my retreat in San Diego, where people fly in or they stay with me for months if they have food addictions and they can't seem to eat healthy and control their monstrous appetites and they can't control their addictive, illicit love affair with eating junk food, they can come in and actually stay with me for a few months to get their under control and to retrain their taste buds and get rid of their addictions, just like a drug addiction, a cocaine addiction center. But the bottom line here is to get started in this crash course, the most important meal of the day is lunch. And to start to get the body to fix the gut as fast as possible, you have your lunch, you have a giant raw salad, and on the salad you put cooked mushrooms and some cruciferous greens like arugula or shredded cabbage. And now here's the kicker. You don't put oil on as a salad dressing. The salad dressing is made with whole nuts or seeds. It might be tomato sauce with almond butter. It might be an orange whipped with some sesame seeds and cashews and blood orange vinegar. We're talking here, we use the fat portion of the salad dressing comes from a whole seed and nut, hemp seeds, sesame seeds, toasted, you know, and then of course, may have a bowl of vegetable beans, onion soup, or maybe a piece of fruit for dessert. But the point is, you take that salad, a big chopped salad, and you chew it, paying attention to liquefy every mouthful. I'll sit there with the person across the table from me, and I'll say, let's work on your gut right now, and let's see if we can take this mouthful of scallion and onion and lettuce and kale or arugula with mushrooms in it, and let's see how long we can chew this and get it to be liquefied in our mouth before we allow it to be swallowed. And that means to maximize the ability of the gut to repair itself quickly. We're going to take this whole salad and chew it down so well that we're going to allow all the nutrients to get enabled to penetrate to the gut wall, into the gut, and to fuel obviously the immune system is housed around your gut, and, you know, in the pyrus patches and all the, those villi behind the villi and the interstitial lining. We have a whole immune system reactive right behind the bacterial biofilm that covers your gut, and we want to get this whole thing activated. So having this raw vegetable salad with a little bit of cooked beans and, you know, the cooked bean soup with it. And also we're using only one fruit with that meal. So the whole glycemic effect of the meal is low because the fruit is diluted in the rest of the salad anyway. But the point I'm making is that's the crash course. That's the starting point, is to get your lunch right as the most important meal of the day. And you have to take your time to chew it, because the reason it's for the most important meal of the day, multiple reasons. But one is, this, all the bulk and all the fiber you just ate shuts down your apostats. You're not craving to eat junk when you're out of the house during the day. The beans and the nuts are digested really slowly. It takes 3 or 4 hours for those calories to come into the bloodstream, so the body can preferentially burn those calories for energy instead of storing them as fat. If you poured oil on it instead, don't forget, because the oil is absorbed in 3 to 5 minutes, not 2 to 3 hours. And that means instead of telling your body to burn it for energy, the body has to rev up fat storage hormones and halt lipolysis, which means you're not going to burn fat anymore. When you take in oil, it stops the breakdown of fat from the body and the utilization of fat for fuel, because oil is telling you to store fat, not break it down. And that immediately is immunosuppressive. I'm saying it's this combination between sugar and oil, which people have been brainwashed worldwide to think oil is healthy for them. You know, to pour oil over the food as if they can eat 400 calories of oil and still get thin. It's impossible unless you're a professional athlete or physical laborer. You're not going to burn off an extra 400 calories of pouring oil over your food. It's the biggest scam ever perpetrated on the world's population, was this advertising, you know, scheme to convince people that olive oil and coconut oil are healthy for them. You know, it's because people just pour in fat on their food. But so what I'm saying is that if you take any nutritional scientist around the world, any legitimate nutritional scientist, not a person trying to sell you a book or talk about their diet, but a real people doing the research, and you ask them, what's healthier, a walnut or walnut oil? What's healthier, sesame seeds or sesame oil? What's better for a person, hemp seeds or hemp seed oil? There's no scientist familiar with the world's literature can say the oils are healthier food compared to the whole food it came from. We have to eat whole foods to get the full biological effects, and the bacteria in the gut live off the whole food and the fibers in those foods, even the lignans in seeds and the fibers in nuts. The sterols and stanols in nuts are excellent food for the most beneficial growth of the most favorable bacteria in your gut. Nature put the right stuff in the food already. It's that we're taking it out and we're changing it, and then we're changing the biology of it, and then think we're going to have a good microbiome. It can't work.
Why? That whole concept just opens up a whole series of questions I want to ask you. And I love when you're on a roll like this, your passion, your knowledge, and this is decades of experience coming into this. What's possible if you just get this food thing right? And I'd love to hear maybe if you have a story of someone that from your clinic or someone that has read one of your books, how quickly can you turn your health around? Like, what is the power of nutrition in this? Because I think some people think, oh, it's important, but they don't realize that if you get this right, your body can change rapidly. So I'd love to hear, like, do you have some form of story that you can share with us?
Well, you know, when you're losing weight, you're not just losing fat. You're also losing a lot of water that the body holds on to dilute the acidity and toxicity of the tissues. The body's smart. When your tissues are toxic, it holds on to water and swells the fat cells to reduce the concentration of the acids in your tissues. So sometimes people are losing lots of weight. You know, my example is tonight. I'm speaking to this guy, Rich, at dinner tonight, and he has lost 85 pounds in 4 months. Right, 85 pounds in 4 months. He's still losing 4 pounds every single week on this program. And he loved when he first came in to me 4 months ago, and he's not staying at the retreat anymore. He's just coming to pick up food because he's a pretty relatively wealthy guy, and he loves the food so much now that he comes in to pay for the food and take it home to where he's home. You know, takes like the three meals and takes them back to him. So he's still like utilizing the food even though it's staying here. But when he first came in to stay here the first month, he hated the food. He was complaining about the food. He was saying, you know, I don't know if I could live like this. I don't know if this food is going to really sustain me. I'm used to eating pizza, you know, whatever it is, and, you know, going to Starbucks and blah, blah, blah. So he liked it more and more, obviously, and he saw the obviously benefit. I mean, he lost his high blood pressure went away. His diabetes went away. His weight, I'm looking at him and going, he looks different every week. I'm like, wow, it's like you know, you must be buying a lot of new clothing there, you know, and getting written a lot of notches on your belt because that clothing looks like it fits you perfectly. Where'd you just go shopping? He said, no, I had it for like 30 years ago. I had the clothing, you know, but whatever. It was funny. But he's wearing this 1955 Mickey Mouse shirt, you know what I mean, from like years ago that was fit him when he was really younger. But the point I'm making is that the main factor here that people don't realize is this guy loves this food. He loves eating this way. It's his most favorite dishes. He loves the chefs. He comes here and just buys the food from us now because he loves the taste of it now. What I'm saying is his taste buds changed. His taste buds got stronger. His food preferences changed. His personality changed. He's appreciative. He's grateful. He's more of a humanitarian. He's more creative. He's not worried about his health anymore. He can get things done, and he enjoys eating more, not less. Because I know what people listening, they're thinking to themselves, you know, oh, just shoot me right now if I have to eat. I'd rather be dead if I have to eat like that and just live on carrot sticks or something, whatever it is they're thinking. Because the addictive personality comes up with all these irrational thoughts and self-delusional thoughts to try to maintain the addiction. The primitive brain doesn't want to give up its addiction. It's difficult for people. They have this illicit love affair, you were saying, with the rich, dangerous foods. It's dangerous to them. They can't stop doing it. They need some help sometimes. But once you get there, this becomes the way you prefer to eat. And most of these people love these recipes. They love the delicious food. They love the creativity of the recipes. And they themselves become more creative and appreciative of this as they get well. So I can give you case after case, like a guy who had ulcerative colitis. So they wanted to remove his colon, right? And then because of the drugs he took for ulcerative colitis, like Remicade and other dangerous medications that cause cancer, these drugs cause cancer, so he developed cancer. So now he's a 40-year-old guy with testicular cancer and ulcerative colitis. And he can't take the treatment, the chemo, for testicular cancer because it'll flare up his ulcerative colitis. So he's in a catch-22. He doesn't know what to do. So he changes his diet. He starts to juice and do the program and he gets well from his ulcerative colitis, and his testicular cancer goes away with no treatment. He gets well from both testicular cancer and ulcerative colitis, both gone, and he's normal. I can give cases from all these cases, but the case I gave about the guy losing weight was even more critical for people to hear, so they recognize they're not giving up their enjoyment of food. they're actually going to enhance their enjoyment of life, and eating good tasting food is going to be part of that enhanced enjoyment. It just takes time to get there. You know what I mean?
Wonderful. Wow. That is so cool. And I hope that everyone listening right now is feeling encouraged that you can make a difference with your health. You just need to put the right food on your plate. So Dr. Furman, I'm curious to hear a little bit more about short chain fatty acids. We talked a little bit about it at the start. And for those listening, don't worry, we'll dive more into these concepts as the gut solution continues. But I'd love to hear it from you, Dr. Furman. What is the power of short chain fatty acids, these chemicals, I suppose, that our gut bacteria creates?
That's correct. The short chain fatty acids, even in small amounts, have anti-inflammatory effects. And the anti-inflammatory effects prevent oxidation of the LDL molecule. It's oxidized LDL that's the bad actor that causes heart attacks, not just regular cholesterol. It's oxidized LDL. So these short-chain fatty acids prevent the oxidation of the LDL molecule. And when you have the sterols and cysteinols from nuts and seeds too, it actually sucks the non-oxidized LDL into the gut. So the bad cholesterol is sucked up by the gut bacteria and by the fibers as they produce the good bacteria. There's an exchange mechanism. Let me explain this just for a second. I'm saying when you eat a walnut or you eat sesame seeds, there's fat in there, right? There's fat in those nuts and seeds. And the fat is not totally accessible to the body because the fibers and the sterols and stanols in the gut bind fat. So all the fat can't come into the body. So all the fat calories, nuts and seeds, don't come in like with oil. And some they come in slowly. But these fat magnets don't hold on to the fat in the nuts and seeds. They allow that fat to go in and they suck other fats out of the body, especially the oxidized fats and the saturated fats. So this combination of the prebiotic, the sterol and stanol prebiotic, and the growth of the bacteria that live on the prebiotic, and the cultivation of short-chain fatty acids have this effect to prevent oxidation of the LDL and to suck bad fats from the bloodstream into the bile and into the digestive tract for elimination to the toilet bowl. So you're actually putting out more bad fats in the toilet bowl, and the good fats, like butyrate, which is a short-chain fatty acid, is allowed to come in. What I'm saying right now, we're talking about these fats produced by bacteria. The body has the ability to excrete some of the bad fats and bring in some of the good fats in their place if you eat the right foods and you have the right microbiomic milieu. Then you can have a beneficial effect on these fatty acids, and then butyrate becomes the predominant messenger to the apostat in the hypothalamus, regulating your appetite. So the production of butyrate from the bacteria in the gut, fueling on the fiber and resistant starch, helps you get rid of that calorie-consuming monster and puts you back instinctually desirous of the right amount of calories, so you're not going to be overweight and you're not going to feel like eating more. You're eating as much as you want to eat. You're just not wanting to eat foods that's going to make you fat. What I'm saying right now, it's unnatural to be overweight, and to have become overweight, you're not just overeating, you're eating the wrong foods, because when you eat the right foods, you don't want to overeat. You don't want to take in the excess calories because you're feeling satisfied by the fiber, by the bulk, by the effects of the bacteria, and by the digestive process that's going on between the food and the bacteria in the gut. All makes you feel satisfied with the right amount of calories. You don't see obese kangaroos and reindeer and squirrels and raccoons running around the woods, and monkeys. You see people, these animals are at their most favorable weight. They know how much to eat. They're not going to sit there and eat all day long and become obese. It's the food that makes people do that. It's the wrong food that makes you become obese and develops your food addictions and gives you the uncontrollable desire for excess calories.
Excellent.
Thank you.
I'm curious, because there's so many fad diets around at the moment that actually restrict your fiber intake. And if we look at it from our human history perspective, we had a lot more fiber before this time period in the last 50 to 100 years. I'm curious as to what you would think the impact is on someone's gut or immunity if they're on either a carnivore, paleo diet, which is, I guess, a lot of them tell you to eliminate, and then somehow that specific greens, lectins are bad for you, and that this is going to make things worse for you. Can you speak around that as to why there's confusion around this?
There shouldn't be that much confusion, but we know that people are, you know, selling, you know, it, you can make a lot of, I guess, people, a lot of, there's a segment of the population that wants to eat what they want to eat. And if you could encourage them to eat, want to eat, if they want to eat more meat, give them a meat diet and they'll buy up that and they'll love you. You know what I mean? Try to give them the reasons why you should eat meat or something. So these things become popular, and they've always been popular. Even before the Atkins craze in the 1970s, these meat-based diets were popular because people want to eat a lot of meat. They think, you know, it's macho, and they, you know, but let's just go into this for a minute, because we have these short-term studies looking at people for a year or two, and they can be controlled or not controlled. They could be blinded or non-blinded. And short-chain studies are useful because they can lead to hypotheses that would make us think that maybe this might be beneficial. Like, I can put you on a Twinkie diet or a diet of just cookies, but because you're only eating cookies, you'll take in less calories, your diabetic parameters will get better, you'll lose weight. I can get you just an all-egg diet, and things will look better, because how many eggs can you eat if that's all you're eating? And things will look better temporarily. And that gives us some suggestion. But now we have to look at that hypothesis that was generated by a short-term study and see if it holds true in long-term studies that look at people epidemiologically over decades. And in these large epidemiologic studies, we look at hard endpoints, not a soft endpoint. A hard endpoint is like death or cardiovascular death or cancer death or heart attacks. That's a hard endpoint. I can give you a cholesterol-lowering drug that lowers your cholesterol. And I say, look at that. It lowered this person's cholesterol 50% in 6 months. I just saved their life. Well, maybe, but we don't know if that drug may cause cancer or may shorten your life from other reasons or may cause other damage to the body. We've got to look at that drug long term to really know its effect. We've got to look at some hard endpoints and look at how long are people living taking that drug before we really know for sure. And what I'm saying right now is we have all those analyses done already. And all the long-term studies, and by the way, there's three criteria to give a study a high credence value, and that is large numbers of people. Number two, goes on for decades, not a few years. And number three, it looks at hard endpoints. We look at those high credence studies. They always show the same thing. More animal products and animal protein in the diet, more premature death, more cardiovascular death, and more cancer death. No matter what your short-term benefits are, from cutting out carbohydrates. And by the way, when you're on a diet that's high in meat and you cut out carbohydrates, it distorts the insulin receptors. Saturated fats don't make it kills the insulin receptor function. So now when you eat oatmeal or mango, your glucose shoots up to the roof. So this person on these carnivore or paleo or diets say, look, I can't eat a mango or oatmeal because look, my sugar goes so high when I do. But that's because you're eating all the saturated fats and distorted the function of your insulin receptors. So you've destroyed your ability to process carbohydrate normally, and you have no gut. Your microbiome in your gut is all gram negatives and is all pro-inflammatory, and you're producing too much TMAO, trimethylamine oxide, from the unhealthy bacteria. So you created a whole pro-inflammatory system. But what I'm saying right now, getting back to this long-term thing, that as we increase the plant protein in the diet, green vegetables, hemp seeds, pine nuts, you know, soybean, whatever it is you're eating, as you eat more high protein plant material, we see lower rates of cancer, low reduced risk of cardiovascular deaths, and of course, lower longer lifespan. So the short-term studies show that plant-rich diets that are made of low glycemic natural foods and are low glycemic with the use of greens and nuts and seeds and beans maximally extend human lifespan in long-term epidemiologic studies. And when you remove broad food groups like beans or nuts or onions or greens and take them out of the diet, you see people not living as long. So we're looking at what makes people live the longest in long-term studies. For example, a study of more than 100,000 Asians showed in the highest quintile of green vegetable consumption had the longest lifespans. That the quintile is five different groups. The highest quintile means the highest fifth of green vegetable consumption. For example, in the Seventh-day Adventist Health Study 2, corroborated 10 other studies to show that when people don't eat nuts and seeds and they take those fatty foods out of the diet, you had a 39% increased risk of cardiovascular death. And those cardiovascular deaths were increasing risk of a pro-arrhythmic death. We're talking about irregular heartbeats, sudden cardiac death, the same thing we saw in the physician's health study, that the inclusion of nuts and seeds decreased risk of sudden cardiac, specifically of sudden cardiac death. And the same thing when people don't eat beans. All long-lived societies eat beans, and we take beans out of the diet, you see increased risk of colon cancer deaths. What I'm saying right now is that we want to not only use these foods that produce the right microbiome, we also want to use the full spectrum of all the foods. We want to use all the G-bombs simultaneously in the dietary portfolio to maximize this health that comes from a favorable microbiome, a favorable micronutrient exposure, and a favorable degree of antioxidant production and penetration in the bloodstream as well. All these things work hand in hand. And that's the way the body's designed. You know, it's the way the body, it's what the brain and the body needs to have excellent health. Now, what I'm saying in this interview is I'm saying that the diseases that plague the modern world are not from genetics or the inevitable consequence of aging, and they're not best treated by doctors and drugs either. That we have, that nutritional science has made significant advances so we can remove causation, allow people to live longer, free of heart attacks, free of strokes, free of dementia, and free of cancers. You don't have to have what happens to other people happen to you. You can choose to use science, nutritional science, to your benefit and have a great, healthy, and fearless life. That's the key. Happy and fearless. You can't have good health if you're afraid every minute of dying and you get going in for mammograms and scopes and tests and going to doctors back and forth thinking you're going to die at any minute. That's not good for your psychology and emotions either, to be worried about dying every minute of your life anyway.
Excellent. We should vote you for president. Are you running for president this year? Because I think people would vote for you. Just as we wrap up, I just want to clarify a few, just an extension from what you've just spoken about. A lot of people in our community or that watch our series, they're suffering from an autoimmune condition and they feel that certain foods flare them up. So you're talking about this plant-based diversity, but they're currently listening saying, oh, if I have that, it fuels my autoimmune condition. So it'd be interesting just to talk into that and any case studies that you've worked with to overcome that.
Yes, it is true that, you know, for example, I've been so experienced working with people with inflammatory bowel disease and autoimmune conditions like lupus, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis. And I could say that my unique experience is that rheumatoid arthritis is not one disease. It's like eight different diseases. And that means the same protocol, you can't go for every patient. And some people are sensitive to too much. Some of the rheumatoid arthritis patients can't eat too much fruit. It flares them up. Some of them can't eat beans. It flares them up. And some can't eat grains much, but some do very well on grains. In other words, invariably, we start them with the juices, right? With the juicing, and we give it, and for most people with rheumatoid arthritis and these autoimmune diseases, by the way, lupus patients and multiple sclerosis patients are very rarely have sensitivity to beans. It's mostly the rheumatoid arthritis patients that do. And it's the rheumatoid arthritis patients we have to be more careful with the gut when we start out because their guts are more porous. So even some other autoimmune disease may respond. So it's mostly lupus. And even lupus patients shouldn't eat too many sprouts and no alfalfa sprouts at all, by the way. But then, so sometimes you're right. We have to feed an ulcerative colitis patient or a rheumatoid arthritis patient a more like gentle diet with spaghetti squash, you know, and quinoa and more. And we can't give them a lot of beans right now. We do give them like hemp seed purees. We do give them peas and carrots. We can't, you know, but we do have to be a little careful with some of them. Not all of them, though. You know what I mean? There is some modification to use experience and knowledge, a little bit of an art in getting this person well. But inevitably, diet is still the main thing to slowly reduce their medications, get rid of their inflammation. And a high protein animal food based diet, it causes, especially with a high amount of saturated fats they're generally consuming, generally speaking, causes too much inflammation and gives too much immune system excitation. We get much better results keeping these people plant-based while we're taking out the bean, for example. And then once they're better, we can give them very well-cooked beans or something in small amounts as they're improving. But for most people, those lectins have anti-cancer effects. They bind toxic metals. They have better effects on appetite suppression. They strengthen bones. There's no problem with eating beans that are well cooked, you know, pressure cook or cook them in the soup for a long time. It's only eating undercooked beans that have most of those problems. But you're correct in insinuating that there's a classification of some autoimmune patients, especially with rheumatoid arthritis, that are better off without the beans and too much fruit right at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Dr. Furman. You've filled our minds with a lot of content today and a lot to mull on, and very motivating. For anyone listening right now, Dr. Furman, could you, for the person that's listening right now that is concerned about coronavirus and is concerned about their health, could you finish with a word of encouragement? Where should that person start today? We had the military approach, but for someone that's feeling maybe a little bit overwhelmed, what words of encouragement have you got for them today?
Yeah, you know, we know that this coronavirus is only negatively affecting those with serious chronic diseases, significantly overweight, people eating poorly. They use this coronavirus as a motivational tool to improve their health. There's a silver lining here. A little bit of fear from coronavirus because it brings this idea of being hurt right up to your face. It could happen next week or next month. So it just means do something. Now's the time to change the way you eat, get started, because within a few weeks of doing so, you're going to have reduced your risk of death by 100-fold. From coronavirus. In other words, what you do right now can have an incredibly powerful effect. So don't live with fear, live with hope, and live with the security that you can control your health destiny. It's not luck. You have control. And if you have control, you're not going to be fearful anymore. But take control and take advantage of what you're learning here.
Excellent. Thank you. And if you haven't already, get on Amazon, buy Dr. Furman's books. You're such an incredible resource, and it's such a privilege actually to interview you and to share your message, because I think it's a message that the world needs to hear. And it's obviously transforming lives in your own clinic, but I know the impact of your books being, you know, on the New York Times bestseller list and all of the amazing things that you've achieved in your lifetime and in your career has helped millions of people around the world. So thank you so much for the work that you've contributed to humanity.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that, and appreciate all the work you're doing too. We'll be right back.